Hello, patrons, and welcome to the Hello Patron Show, temporarily and tentatively called Hello Patrons. I'm Tom Merritt.
Need a postal address, city, state, zip phone to update Sarah's record.
What? What are you? We're recording it. That's how you greet people?
Hello, everyone. Sorry, I was just reading an email, lad.
Yeah, I know. It's rude.
You know what?
I got in the middle of something.
No, Patrick, I just started recording and I made a big, overly dramatic deal out of welcoming people. And the next, and Roger says, I need Sarah's zip code mailing address.
I can't believe that guy.
Always caught up in work. What's wrong with him? Oh, my nose.
So what do you make of that Marvel buying 20th Century Fox story?
Well, I don't make anything more out of it now than I did when it broke a week ago or whenever.
But now it's more sure.
No, well, it's not. More,
well, yeah. It's not sure. It's more
no,
sure.
No, it's not. It was yes. Exactly the sure a week ago when CNBC reported
just,
it.
It's just more talk. There's just more.
Yeah, here's, there are, okay, there's, here, I'm not going to tell you what to think. Here's what I think. A week or so ago when it broke, I was like, CNBC saying they're talking, but saying they're not talking right now, but they were talking. So they're going to start talking again. This is going to drag on for a little. Today is like, see, here we go. This is them still talking. So I try not to freak out at this stuff. Like, because that's what's causing all the problems in the world, even though this is not an example of something that's going to cause a problem. I just try to get in the habit of saying, no, this is expected. Let's not sensationalize it. This is what we thought would happen. Anyway, that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, but let's say it did happen.
Yes. When it first broke, I got pretty excited about it because, you know, A, Fantastic Four gets another chance, and
no more chances, please.
I think it's definitely a sign of the influence of Amazon and Netflix and all of that. Hello, Sarah Lane. We're already recording, just so you know.
Oh, well, good to see everybody. Here you are.
Oh. Yeah, see, Sarah wouldn't say that if we weren't recording.
If we weren't. Yeah.
She would chastise each and every one of us.
Yeah, I mean, you can't hear Sarah when we're not recording, but phew.
It's usually the daily dressing down where she points out all of our faults.
You know what?
They're helpful, I have to say.
There are some people like that, though. Some people who behave incredibly.
You know, it separates the...
So Patrick's very excited that the Disney-Fox acquisition talks seem to be back on.
Well, I mean... I'm just excited at the prospect of having a unified, almost unified... Yeah. You know,
well, I mean,
Marvel
with Sony playing nice, it's basically unified, right? That's pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, but for Sony, it's Spider-Man, and they still have a bunch of other things. Like they have this ridiculous, Sinister Six project. Everyone wants a cinematic universe, and just like DC, they're rushing to it without properly setting it up.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, you know, some universes are deserving of big screen treatment, others not so much.
I'm getting very worried, Roger, because I think you might be implying that Marvel might be in the not category.
It depends. I mean, it really depends on what and how they flog stuff.
So are you saying you don't love the Marvel movies?
I like some of them, and I'm kind of meh on other ones. All right. You know what? I literally stopped reading any Marvel comic book after they rebooted the universe.
You mean the Ultimate Universe?
No, not the Ultimates Universe. When they rebooted the universe, went after the House of M. Remember that story?
Mm-hmm.
That was like 10, 12 years ago. I was just done. And then I skipped out on DC's New 52 and everything else that they did after The Blackest Night.
No, yeah, well, I mean, I Some Black is good. I like some comics. I don't necessarily love all of them, but I think Marvel has done a really good job at portraying them in movies.
They definitely have some solid
in ways that I didn't think was possible. Is the most, you know.
I never had the, you know, didn't think it was possible. It was just, you know, when would they? I don't know. I think my concern is that they're so caught up in trying to expand and build this universe that a lot of the stories are very, I don't know, they all have a very Me Too feel. They don't necessarily feel unique.
I don't know if, I mean, maybe to an extent. They're sticking to the formula, I suppose.
I mean, oh, it's very formulaic. It's very formulaic.
I agree. I guess it doesn't bother me as much, even though I didn't love Thor Ragnarok.
I haven't even seen it yet. I have the last one I've been out and able to see was Avengers, the last Avengers.
Oh, Age of Ultron?
No, it was the
Civil War wasn't
Civil War
exactly an Avengers, but yeah, it was basically an Avengers movie. Yeah. Oh, but Civil War is one of the best movies in history.
Yeah, but so this is the thing. I remember reading it when it was on.
Oh,
the,
it's different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's different, but the thing is everything is cut down because you can't have 100 people on screen, which is one of the things I'm going to probably have issues with
in Civil War, Infinity Wars.
Infinity Wars is because, you know, if you read the books, there's like they pulled 100 plus characters across like 20 books to fight the thing.
I agree. But that's the thing. It can't, given how impossible that part is, I think Civil War was a pretty good recreation of the spirit of Civil War, the book, which, by the way, I kind of enjoyed when I was younger, but I also think is a lot more comic-y and not in the best way, meaning, you know, some people change allegiances for no reason and it's not as relatable. The base issue that the question they're asking is fantastic, but I don't think they execute on it as well as they could have. And I think in the movie Civil War, they execute on it pretty well.
I will say in many ways, the writing, I know this will be heresy, in the at least for the dialogue, is a lot better than the movies. But part of it is that at least Marvel has a long tradition of writing incredibly convoluted and contrived story plots because that's the way their writers were trained. Like it was just, I mean, I remember reading the first Infinity Gauntlet, you know, when they did the Infinity Gauntlet. That's like, this is the most contrived set of circumstances for anyone to show up in. It's like ridiculous.
I think also pre-Ultimates, it was even more comic-y. The Ultimates sort of set it up as a semi-believable situation, like a what would happen if that thing happened? Whereas before, it was really more like, oh, let's try fun stories for children. And to be fair, the Infinity Gauntlet, the initial one, has a lot more writing and a lot less action. And the themes are, I think, more philosophical almost.
Yeah, but, you know, it's so funny because the philosophical viewpoint that comes to the end of the Infinity Gauntlet, it's so... Yeah, it's not as grandiose as it should be. In fact, it's almost like someone should have just went to a shrink first before they decided to steamroll the universe.
Yeah, it is. I mean, okay. Well, I was going to launch into a diatribe, but...
Oh, I guess I changed around the articles, Sarah and Patrick.
Oh.
Did you see that?
Okay. Uh-oh.
See this.
So, Patrick, you're reading the Instagram story now. Sarah, you have the Qualcomm story that just broke about new Windows computers that run on ARM.
Got it.
And then Patrick still has the same in the quick hits, but Sarah, you now have a quick hit about YouTube pulling from Amazon Echo Show.
Oh, again?
Got it.
Yep.
Do we know what's happening there, or?
Yeah, it's a dispute over Amazon video not working with Chromecast, basically.
If you don't do it, we won't do it.
Yeah.
Okay, yep, all good.
Cool.
What's the, are you learning French?
Let's get to him the boom boom.
Man?
Qu'est-ce que tu fais?
Je lis les articles.
D'où est-ce que tu viens?
So, I know this is going to be a question that's basically 2 months late again.
C'est dommage.
But where is your new office?
Where is what?
Your new office. Is it still in the basement? Did you?
Oh, yeah, no. Where I used to be is right there.
It's like three feet away from the old office.
All right. So what is, can we ask what motivated the change, or?
I just wanted to shake things up, try something different. There's a few different reasons. Sarah coming on, I was like, oh, this is a chance to change the look. I'd had that same look forever. And also I wanted to do a standing desk. So now I'm standing during the show instead of sitting.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of
just like
kind of the reasons. Those are the reasons.
All day battery life.
Well, 20 hours. I mean, it's pretty good.
Windows.
How's the jackhammering?
Oh, they finally stopped.
Yeah.
My friend is still over there.
So we don't get to riff on our movie idea?
No, I guess not.
I mean, we could, but the context is lost.
Roger, you should start the live video too. Everyone quiet. Everyone be quiet.
Yeah, I really want to know what the performance.
Are you going to start the live video?
Starting.
Oof. All right, Qualcomm story. Lot of specs.
Actually, it's a big deal because this is their second attempt
at
running Windows on
an ARM. I mean, they've had
No, it's good.
Did you see that? Scott in our Slack just said, see you guys in an hour for the What Patrick Got Wrong This Year event.
Shame. There is absolutely no basis for such a horrifyingly aggressive remark.
Yes, I think so. You should ban him from Facebook.
I think that should be our response to everything.
That's going to be my new thing. Oh, yeah, well, you're banned from Facebook now. Even though we're not on Facebook. I'm not reporting you to Facebook. That's just going to be my response. Well, hello, everyone.
Hello.
So I think the lineup's fine now. You fixed the emails. Thank you.
I was like, wait a second.
I remembered putting them in the order that I said, but that's not how I put them in.
No, it makes perfect sense. And then I just in case you had read it before, on line 43, I condensed both of them a bit.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's awesome. Yeah,
of course.
Okay. Is everybody ready to go?
I'm ready.
Why not?
Do a show.
Yeah. Let's.
Patrick was born in this state.
Mm-hmm.
The state is ready?
Yes, the state of readiness.
Basically, my catchphrase is, I was born ready whenever Tom asks.
Now we have to go. All right.
Damn it, sorry.
3, 2, 1.
The Daily Tech News Show is brought to you by its global listener base, not outside organizations. To find out how you can contribute, go to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for December 5th, 2017. From DTNS headquarters in Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, where there's a lot of fire smoke out at the beach, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from the Finnish offices in Helsinki, I'm Patrick Beja.
I love how that sounds still. I really do. Joining us also is our producer, Roger Chang. How are you, Roger?
I am a little... I'm good.
Under the weather, apparently. If you answer by coughing...
I apologize. I have something in my throat.
Okay, we'll let you take care of that and get into some tech things you should know. The Honor 7X phone is your story, Sarah, so you should read it.
I will. The Honor 7X phone is now available in the U.S. for pre-order for $200, delivering mid-December. It costs £270 in the U.K. and €300 in Europe for some regions, getting immediate shipping. The 5.93-inch phone has a 2:1 display and a 2160 by 780 screen, though no fast charging and no NFC.
Apple has begun selling an unlocked version of the iPhone X without a SIM card in the US, meaning you can activate it on any carrier. You could buy an unlocked phone previously by paying full price, but there was confusion about which models would work on which systems, and all came with carrier SIM cards.
I was in getting a laptop repaired at an Apple store, and I heard three different employees give three different answers on whether you could buy a phone unlocked before this happened. So this will help clear that up. Samsung has begun mass production of the first 512-gigabyte embedded universal flash storage chip, paving the way for phones with 512 gigabytes of storage on one chip. Nice, slim 512 gigabyte phones. Chip has 860 megabyte per second sequential read speed, 255 megabyte per second sequential write speed. Essentially, that means you could pull over a 5 gigabyte HD video in about 6 seconds.
Google has pulled YouTube from the Amazon Echo Show. You might be like, again? Mm. Yes. Again, and also announced that after January 1st, YouTube will no longer work on Fire TV boxes. Google says part of the problem is Amazon doesn't carry Chromecast and Google Home and doesn't make Prime Video available for Google Cast.
Yeah, but these companies won't abuse their dominant market positions, I swear. I swear.
No.
Isn't that competition, though?
It's a tit for tat.
I guess.
Yeah, to an extent, maybe, arguably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here are some more top stories, Patrick.
Neiman Labs' Nicholas Kwa said he has learned that Apple acquired Pop-Up Archive, which makes tools that transcribe, organize, and search audio files. Its podcast search engine shut down November 28. Apple is still working on podcasts.
I know. That's why this is such big news. I saw it like near the top of TechMeme today. I'm like, okay, I guess people were that worried.
I mean, was anyone under the impression that Apple was moving away from podcasts?
No.
The thing is, you're never sure. It's been, 12 years, and they seem like they should be making more with podcasts, but they never really are. So everyone, there's always in the air this impression that they're not, abandoning it completely, but sort of leaving it as it is and whatevering it. So this makes it look like at least they're looking into stuff and, maybe actually implementing new features like searching for inside podcasts through transcribing and stuff like that.
I mean, think about the fact that we're still calling them podcasts.
Right.
Which came from the iPod back in, the dark ages.
The Middle Ages.
So it's like, in that sense, the term won't die. So, and Apple really has a stronghold on the market. I know there are a lot of podcatchers that people use, but that's,
70%
it's a company that people really equate with podcasts.
Yeah, 70% of podcast traffic comes from iTunes, generally speaking.
And Discovery is the big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to find a podcast, usually that's the one place you go.
That's why we need all of you to just tell people, just in case. Or review us.
Well, moving on to another operating system entirely. Along with the release of Android 8.1, Google is releasing Android Oreo Go to OEMs. The low-end Android configuration also comes with a suite of Go versions of Google apps like Maps, Gmail, YouTube Assistant, and others. Android Go works with devices with less than 1 gigabyte of RAM, using less memory and less storage. Also, as part of the release, Android Oreo 8.1, the burger emoji, has relocated the cheese to above the meat patty. Woo, that was really stressful for a while. The beer emoji as well no longer has a gap between the beer and the froth, which, like everyone knows, is impossible.
This is why you know I'm boring at parties. I'm more excited about Android Go and the possibility for, you know, accessible, more useful smartphones to the developing market and low-end users and cheap phones, whereas most people very excited about the cheese being put in the right place on the burger emoji.
I will admit, the cheese, the misplaced cheese, even though once it was pointed out to me, I was like, yeah, that is weird. Never would have bothered me. Never would have noticed.
However...
very upsetting.
Mm. No, I agree. I mean,
I'm a beer defender.
You are? Wait, yes. What?
It was what they should have done is gotten rid of the top circle of the yellow. That's what was throwing people off. What they were trying to do is show some froth in the glass. Now the froth is just sitting on top of the glass. It looks even weirder to me.
I suppose so, but it needed fixing of some kind.
It did. You're right about that.
Everyone will agree about that. The thing is, as you know, boring as you might be, oh, that does not look like there's some froth in the glass. I'm looking at it again. It is definitely beer, and then the stuff floating on nothing. It is no, that you're wrong, Tom. Sorry.
No, that's the new one. The new one has no froth in the glass now.
No, honestly, but look at the old one.
The old one was trying to show froth in the glass, but they were showing the top of the yellow beer, which caused the problem because then it just looked empty.
Google devs, some of you are drinking beer, I'm sure of it. What's the deal?
And you know, the thing is, yes, the important part of it is Android Go, you know, Oreo Go, great, fantastic. But we have so few fun, lighthearted stories that we can, you know, all together agree that this is just dumb fun. I really think this story kind of serves a... coming together, take a break purpose for everyone to have fun with.
I feel extra humbled that it took a French person to point that out to me.
All right, talk about the FCC then.
Yeah, this is going to cheer everybody up. The US FCC wants to change ISPs from being considered common carriers back to being considered information services as they were before 2015. You all probably know that if you've been following the show. Back in those heady days before 2015, AT&T was sued by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission over throttling its unlimited customers. This is the practice where they would say, well, you're unlimited, but if you use above this amount, we're going to slow down your speeds. AT&T argues that since it's a common carrier in voice, not data, but voice, and because voice and data are part of a whole package, the FTC has no jurisdiction over this matter, even though this is back when it was an information service. And one of the arguments that Ajit Pai has been using is that it needs to be regulated as an information service, and then the FTC can regulate it. If AT&T wins their case on those grounds, then the reclassification of ISPs as information services would mean that, in many cases, neither the FCC or the FTC could handle customer complaints about service. Now, the FCC is voting on reclassification December 14th. Some people have asked for that vote to be delayed. The FCC says it's not going to delay it. So this AT&T court case is likely to be decided after the vote has already been made. That's all you have to say is grunts.
I'll leave that one to you.
Fair enough to AT&T. AT&T trying to say, look, hey, we'd like to be a common carrier when it's beneficial to us and an information service when it's beneficial to us and neither when it's beneficial to us. I mean, that's what they're going to do. You know, don't get me wrong, but that's not the way it's supposed to work. And when one of the safeguards that is being presented is, well, don't worry, if these companies have abusive practices that we can no longer regulate because they're not common carriers, the FTC is the proper place for this anyway. This would make that less possible.
I mean, the whole sort of like common carrier and voice thing is also really convoluted because you can do a lot of voice not in a traditional voice sense, which AT&T is arguing, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's like to say like, oh, well, hold on a second. These are, you know, the way that, you know, our company, what we provide is split up is, it depends on how you use it.
Yeah. No, and what AT&T is trying to say is like, we're a common carrier, so you can't touch this. And the FTC's like, yeah, but that's that was an information service. Like, yeah, but it's part of the whole package. And the package is generally under a common carrier, so you can't touch that, which would give them an out for everything in the future.
Yeah, it's basically the problem. You're completely right that AT&T is doing what it should be doing, defending its interest. And the way it's supposed to work, the way it's built, is that you have a balance for that with government organizations that provide that check and those balances. So trying to remove it entirely is probably not something to look forward
to. Well, I think it's an example of the problem that internet service isn't an information service or a telecommunications service. And so therefore, you need a different way of approaching it that just clearly would define if somebody is also providing voice service as a common carrier, that doesn't stop them from being regulated on their data services. There just isn't a rule necessarily like that, which is why the court has to weigh in. And don't forget, the court may say you're full of it, AT&T. The FTC still gets to regulate you here.
Yeah, hopefully. Instagram has updated its stories function for Android and iOS to automatically archive them to private part of your profile. The feature will be turned on by default, but can be turned off. You can then make what's called stories highlights by adding up to 100 old story clips, which you can display on your profile. So basically, they don't have to go away forever now.
So if I understand this right, this is, you know, if I'm perusing Instagram stories of my friends, this is something that I will have seen already, but then a friend can sort of promote as like best of highlights later on.
No, it's only your own stuff. Only your own stuff.
No, but it's sure it's my own stuff. But let's say I'm, you know, I'm looking at what you have decided to highlight again.
Oh, you're looking at my profile. Got it. Yeah.
So, okay. I guess, I don't know. The thinking behind this is I guess Facebook/Instagram is sort of like, well, you know, think about all the stories that come and go. And, you know, if within a 24-hour period, you know, Sarah doesn't look at what Tom has shared, it's gone forever. We can make use of this information again. I don't really play around in stories all that often, but I know a lot of people who do. So I guess recycling content that you like and you want to resurface again isn't terrible.
Well, the premise of Snapchat was ephemerality, right? So Instagram stories was supposed to be that for Instagram, and it started to eat a little of Snapchat's lunch. One thing Snapchat had is memories, so you could save them when you wanted to, and Instagram didn't have that. So Instagram did one better and said, not only can you save them, but you can create these little profile highlight reels that you can put up there. And when people come to your profile, they'll see Sarah's great summer, and it's all your favorite stories of the summer all in one place.
You know, the whole ephemeral thing, as much as a sort of novel concept, ooh, interesting, you know, we don't have to think about everything being saved forever. That is so done. And it's been done for a while. I mean, Snapchat, once they allowed you to like save your own snaps, it's like, no, everyone knows that people want to save the stuff that they like the best. And none of these services are really ephemeral anymore. Sure, you can use them that way. But there are all these little tricks now to be like, well, if you really like that like cool filter that you added, you can save it and, you know, throw it up somewhere else. I mean, half of the photos that I see on Facebook are like screen caps that somebody took from a snap that they, you know, had made public at some point, because you can tell by the filters. So the whole thing is a little bit of a failed experiment.
True.
Well, perhaps this will not be a failed experiment. No. Asus, Lenovo, and HP introduce Windows computers that run on Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 processor with near instant boot, LTE connections, and a 20-hour battery life. They run Windows 10 S, which uses an emulator to run 32-bit Windows apps. Users can upgrade to Windows 10 Pro for free, cannot run software that uses kernel mode drivers, so no antivirus, no games with anti-cheat software, that kind of thing. The 12.2-inch HP Envy X2 tablet weighs 1.5 pounds. The 13.3-inch Asus Novo Go goes for $599 at 64 gigabytes and $799 for 256 gigabytes. Lenovo will announce the model in the coming weeks. Qualcomm also announced the successor to the Snapdragon 835 will be called the Snapdragon 840. 45. Woo, shocker. It will pair with the X20 LTE modem, which provides gigabit connectivity.
Yeah, so these are Microsoft's second attempt at ARM stuff, right? Like, hey, that Windows RT thing, that was a bad dream. It was kind of a nightmare. Forget about it. This is the new way. They announced this a while ago where they're going to use an emulator so that basically any program for Windows will run on this. 64-bit isn't ready yet. That can be a problem for some people, but it's coming. I don't know what they're going to do about this kernel stuff, but you can still run Windows Defender. It's not like you're without antivirus. It's just the third-party stuff. And these things are super light, super slim, and I think they may be somewhat appealing to folks. Although, when you look at Chromebooks, these prices don't feel as cheap as maybe they should be.
I'm not sure the price is going to be the issue. I think people are going to want, you know, tablet-sized. Some people are going to want tablet-sized devices that are actually full-fledged Windows. I mean, for me, the no games, well, no, some of the games was a little bit of a But to be honest, I doubt even an 835 would run the kind of games I'm interested in. So. It is definitely, I mean, okay, it is way, 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 way better than Windows RT. And comparing it to it, even though I understand the logic behind it, is almost doing it a disservice because this is 90-95% of Windows when RT was kind of a weird offshoot.
Yeah, this is going to be more capable than a Chromebook, arguably, because it's able to run most Windows programs. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I want to add one real quick thing. The lesson from IBM's PC Junior, which was their follow-on computer to the IBM PC, was that it was only 89% compatible with the IBM PC. If users feel that they will not have the full Windows experience with it, regardless of what it's on, they're going to feel cheated, and they're probably going to steer towards something that offers a full Windows experience because it's called Windows. If they called it something else, I think they would have less of an issue.
And with most people, this is going to have the full Windows experience. That's the big difference between this and RT. Is with the emulator, it's no different than buying a low-powered Windows machine in a way where you can say like, oh, it's only got a 32-bit processor, so you know some of the apps out there won't work. Most people won't notice.
A better way of putting it is you know, it's not 90% of Windows. It's Windows for 90% of the people.
Oh, maybe. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com. Also available as a flash briefing on the Amazon Echo, on your Google Home, and in the Anchor app. Go download that, too. YouTube said Monday it plans to have more than 10,000 people on staff in 2018. That would be, by most estimates, about 25% more people than they have now, to identify inappropriate content. These are people who just look at what the algorithm flagged and try to make sure that the bad stuff doesn't stay up. YouTube hopes that this will not only stop objectionable content, but also help stop false positives. Daily Tech News Show regularly gets flagged as inappropriate for advertising for some reason every time I appeal and every time it passes the appeal. So I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not the only one on YouTube that says, hey, my stuff keeps getting flagged and I don't know why. YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki also said the company will launch a new comment moderation tool and shut down comments altogether in some cases. Now, Patrick, you noted, along with a couple of other stories, that this is another step in the march of these companies taking over responsibility for what people say on their platform.
Yeah, and I mean, we do also have stories about Twitter having issues and Facebook basically having, I guess, false positives or arguable decisions. And this is the beginning of the opening of the hashtag hell portal, hashtag portal to hell, as our friend Justin Robert Young christened it. Because it's true that once you put the decision power in the hands of the companies, as opposed to maybe the hands of the law or the courts or an outside organization, it does kind of create those situations where yes, you probably get a lot more of the inappropriate stuff out of the system, but also you're going to have some people who disagree with the stuff you put out of the system. And for me, I used to be very much in the camp of, this is a horrible idea because we don't want YouTube to decide what we can or cannot see. Same deal with Facebook and Twitter. I think everyone would agree that in an ideal situation, we have the rule of law and that's how things are decided. But as the years have been coming and more content is on those platforms, I've shifted my opinion to, well, it's not really possible. The idea is great, but it's not really possible for the law, with a capital L, to decide on all of those. So I do end up thinking that there is a need for those companies to organize and somehow at least, you know, do some pre-work on some of it. And I'm wondering if, even though it does mean portal to hell, hell portal issues, and I wonder if, you know, you guys have sort of evolved your thinking, or if you were always on that boat, or if you think what's happening with those, you know, Facebook and Twitter issues is such a problem that we just shouldn't have them decide.
You know,
well, I think it's just, it speaks to the fact that algorithms don't understand the nuances that humans are still able to get around. I mean, the YouTube situation is a really great example of that. YouTube needs to hire a bunch of humans to, you know, double check an algorithm that isn't always flagging stuff that, you know, people are complaining about and saying, this is wildly inappropriate. Why is this on your network? And I mean, most people, you know, yes, YouTube shouldn't necessarily be deciding what we're seeing and not seeing, but in the case of what's going on with kids programming, you know, that has been directed at kids, a lot of it is like, whoa, it's kind of crazy. This is not right. So it seems so like a stopgap measure, right? To me, where, well, so, a lot of people are going to be hired and then probably let go once the algorithm gets better.
Hold on. No, the humans mess up a lot too. Don't forget that. In one of these stories, it's mentioned that Facebook moderators don't see the context of posts when they're reviewing them. So if someone is in the context of a long thread saying something that makes sense as a joke, like kill them all, right? Out of context, they could say, well, that sounds like a threat, banning that person. And that's an example of that has happened. So I don't think it's as clear cut as humans or algorithms are better or not. I think the algorithms can get better. And certainly it's showing, you're right, Sarah, they need humans to do this. The problem is YouTube tried to benefit from saying they were one thing while being perceived as another. And by that, I mean they said and were an open platform that they were not responsible for the content. You know, buyer beware, when you come in here, you may see everything. We're a web publishing platform. We don't hold people responsible. That's between you and them. But then tried to take advantage of them being perceived as, oh, I go to YouTube to watch this, so that it could become the dominant video platform and be seen as a channel and get the benefits of being perceived as a channel without having to have those responsibilities. And that's what's happening here. And I think Facebook and Twitter had a little bit of the same thing, especially Twitter, where they said, we're just a web publishing platform. We don't take responsibility, but also we're the place. Come to us. We're the channel. You know, and they acted that way.
I don't think I agree.
Oh, go ahead, Patrick.
I think there's a little bit of something disingenuous here in your description, because it's not just that YouTube then decided, all right, we're going to change things. I think a lot of public pressure was put on them and on Twitter and on Facebook to regulate those comments, posts, videos, whatever. It's not that they, you know, wanted to say, oh no, you know, we thought we didn't want to touch anything, but in the end, we're going to anyway. It's that a lot of people were saying, hey, you're a huge company. You need to police these things.
Well, no, I agree with you. What I'm saying is not what you think I said.
Oh, okay.
what I'm saying is YouTube wanted to be seen as a big channel. Like, hey, come to us for all your things. We're YouTube. Come watch YouTube. But as soon as someone said, hey, but there's this really odd thing. You shouldn't have that on your channel. That we're not the channel. We're an open platform. They tried to play both sides of the fence. So, and then what you're saying is what has happened now is the public pressure has caused them to start to back off a little and have to deal with the consequences of that.
Well, and I mean, some of the public pressure is, you know, YouTube is different than something like Twitter or Facebook because we've been throwing out those other social networks. You know, when my friend, I don't have children, but lots of friends who do, when my friend's two-year-old is having a meltdown in the back of the car, they don't say, Sarah, hand him your phone and, you know, fire up Twitter. It's play a YouTube video. And I go, which one? And they're like, any of them. If it says Wheels on the Bus, just play it. So that's the thing, is like YouTube has to recognize that children are watching video. YouTube has become a huge resource of just like play a video for a kid.
Yes, YouTube knows that. When you get to that point,
you have to recognize that if something is going to be fed to a kid that seems to have a pretty innocent title and, you know, doesn't have a parental advisory warning, but is super weird and possibly dangerous, then the network can't totally ignore that stuff.
The original YouTube, but
then they
though,
flag videos like Daily Tech News Show for no good reason.
Well, so that's because they're using clubs and sticks to try to solve the problem, basically.
No, but that's part of it. Part of it. So then the question becomes, do we agree that they should regulate stuff, even though we're going to have those edge cases where they take stuff away that shouldn't be taken away?
Well, I guess where I'm at,
it should be a free-for-all.
The horse is out of the barn at this point, and so YouTube has no other choice but to go try to get the horse and put it back in the barn, or at least put a saddle on the horse, or, you know, do something with the metaphor.
Some horse metaphor.
Yeah, take the horse for a ride. Feed the horse something. If the horse is hungry, for goodness sake, YouTube, stop abusing horses. But I will stop abusing the metaphor and get back to saying, yes, now it's damage control. It's like, okay, what are the worst problems and how do we get on those and how do we solve those? And we'll throw 10,000 people at it if that's what it takes, because we have to and we have the resources and we got that big. If in the beginning, though, they had held themselves to the line of, you don't watch YouTube, you watch channels on YouTube, just like you don't go to WordPress, you go to dailytechnewsshow.com, which happens to use WordPress, they wouldn't have these problems, but they wanted to be YouTube, so now they have to take responsibility for it.
Yeah, I think the responsibility was, at least that's how it looks like from France and from Europe. We wanted them to have the responsibility for it, and ultimately, I think they have to.
Once they got big enough, then you wanted them. But I mean, in 2005, I don't think you cared whether they had responsibility.
Of course. Yeah, for the past few years.
And nobody goes after Blogspot, another Google property, and says, you're responsible for this blog, because they're not out there saying Blogspot brings you all this stuff. They're just saying the blogs bring you this stuff. What's
it's
that?
It's just not big enough.
Well,
it's
okay, but then talk about WordPress.com, which is big enough, right? I was just using that because it's a Google property, but sure, WordPress is big enough. But they hang it back and they're like, we're just the platform and we're not going to try to pretend like we're anything else or take advantage of that perception.
I think it's a matter of size. Size in this case does matter. And even WordPress.com is not big enough and not controversial enough.
I would argue that. But maybe you have a different opinion. Post it at our Facebook group. but you know, be careful. You might have it taken down. Facebook.com/group/Daily Tech News Show. And thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit as well. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. What's in the mailbag, Sarah?
Well, we got an email from Paul. And this is, he calls himself the web development instructor from Houston. Hello, Paul. Hope Houston is treating you well. This is in response to a conversation we had yesterday about underscores versus dashes and URLs and elsewhere. So Paul says, dashes are inherently better than underscores and URLs because underscores often get confused for spaces by the fact that they're at the bottom of the line. Sometimes they just aren't seen, other times covered up with underlines. While most people don't type URLs, it still happens. When Google recommended dashes, I think it was saying there's a small but consistent secondary SEO bump by using dashes rather than underscores. It's not that they explicitly added it to the algorithm, but it's an effect that always shows up. So while I agree with Anil Dash and his premise that Google influences how a content is created too much, perhaps, He probably picked the worst example to start explaining the argument with. It's both the most benign thing to worry about and the wrong basis for the argument.
I disagree with Paul saying it's the wrong basis for the argument. In fact, I think it even strengthens his argument to say, hey, when Matt Cutts said this, all he meant was people generally don't confuse underscores for dashes, so you know, maybe use dashes. But he didn't explain that and instead made it sound like a pronouncement from on high. And it began this feeling that I must do what Google says. And so I think it strengthens it to say it was an innocent beginning that led to this.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many people are confusing underscores for spaces, but then again, I get a lot of email from people who are emailing a different Sarah Lane.
So. Yeah, no, that's true.
Stranger things have happened.
Well, there you go, folks. We're all done for the day. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you to Patrick Beja for being here, as always, on Tuesdays. Patrick, what's going on in your world?
A bunch of stuff, but you can check all of it out at frenchspin.com, where I host my two shows that I do in English. Pixels, about gaming. Oh, and by the way, you're going to get a DTNS Labs games pretty soon. So if you're interested in games, you can listen to that and then listen to Pixels. And the Phileas Club, which is coming up on episode 100 pretty soon. We're going to do something fun, I hope, for episode 100, and we'll talk to you about it.
Well, yeah. Early congratulations on your 100th episode. That's a good milestone.
I am confident your episode 100 is going to be amazing.
That might be a hint.
Is that a prediction?
Hey, and if you want that DTNS Labs episode that Patrick was just mentioning it, if you're a Patreon supporter, you already have it. Go check out patreon.com/DTNS. Just put it up this morning. It'll come to everybody on Saturday. The DTNS Labs episodes go up on Patreon as soon as they're done, and they go up on the weekends for everybody else. So get in there and join Patreon. If you've got only a dollar a month, it doesn't take much. It'll super help us to do more. We want to go to CES. We want to broadcast from CES more and bring you more stories from there. We want to do all kinds of things, and you make that happen, including more roundtable show. You like those roundtable shows? We get more of those. The more people support us at patreon.com/DTNS.
If you have anything to tell us, questions to ask, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com is the place to do it. We read everything and we try to put as much as we can on the show. And we even have some ideas to, you know, have a place for more of your emails to shine and come to light. We are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our email address, our URL rather, is dailytechnewsshow.com.
Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good show.
Good show.
Good conversation.
Good stuff.
I think it's this is not unusual for you and I, Patrick, but I think we were coming at this story from two different ends. I was coming at it from YouTube always said it was this, but they didn't act that way, and this is what they get. And you were coming at it from YouTube started doing this, and we need to make them stop it.
Maybe I didn't express myself well. YouTube wasn't doing it, and we wanted them to do it.
Sure, yeah. YouTube started allowing everything on the platform in my head.
Right.
We needed them to stop allowing everything on the platform. But yeah, you were looking at it. I think this may be something that can happen, especially for somebody like me who was covering YouTube when it was brand new, versus it had to get big here before it started to spread outside. So by the time it comes to Europe and people start using it there outside of the early adopters, it's already big and it's already making that thing where it's like, you know, we're actually too big to act the way we're acting, but we're going to keep acting that way anyway.
Yes. I mean, maybe that's part of it, but you know, those things come pretty quickly. To our markets. YouTube was maybe, you could access it immediately and then it became big. Yeah, it became big a little bit later, but not that long. It spreads really, really fast as soon as it's available. And that's why they sometimes delay it. But As soon as it's available, YouTube got big. When would you say in the U.S.? Maybe we don't really remember.
2006, 2007.
Oh, that it wasn't big in 2006.
Oh yeah, no. By 2007, it was. We were having meetings at CNET about like maybe we should have our stuff on YouTube. This is pretty big.
Right, but big for the tech industry where people were like, oh, maybe we should put stuff there. Maybe. I mean, yeah, if it's 2007, I don't feel like it was big in France. So maybe that's a different. Yeah,
I may be wrong, but my premise is that, you know, if YouTube had stuck to, we're just a platform, right? We're just a place where you can publish things and really push the channel branding, right? YouTube is the tool, not the destination. And allowed people to have like vanity URLs and things like that, they wouldn't have this problem.
No way.
Yeah. No way. Absolutely. Way.
No way. No, it's like, I mean, I don't think they could have. Because even if they had pushed the vanity URLs and stuff like that, it's still the consistent YouTube experience brand. And most channels, especially those, why is Siri trying to do stuff?
Like, pay attention to me instead.
No, I really don't think that would have been possible. Unless, you know, YouTube had become some kind of white label thing that would have, you know, disappeared as a brand. But
yes. No, that's what I'm saying. If they would have said, look, we are a tool. Like, and our brand is, you want to publish a video channel, come to youtube.com, rather than being like a destination, they wouldn't have these problems. You're saying that would have been a bad choice for them, which is a whole different conversation.
No, I'm saying you're talking about a different product.
Yes, but it was the product that their premise was built on, which was, we're not the people publishing this stuff.
Well, I think there's a difference. If you really mean it, then you build a different product. The product they built, even though they were saying, oh, we're not, you know, they were just using it as the web, we're not, you know, responsible for the comments on our site.
Or the content, anything.
Yeah.
And I don't think they have to be, is what I'm saying. I think there is a way for a company to operate and say, no, we are just the platform. We are just the technology for people to use. But that's not what YouTube wanted to be. They wanted to have all the benefits of being the destination without any of the responsibility for the content.
But I think the problem that we're facing, and sorry, Roger, but the problem that we're facing is that when something becomes this problematic, when you can see ISIS beheading people on a platform, then people are going to be looking for someone who is responsible for this.
Sure.
And they're going to find it. And if in those cases, even if YouTube had, I mean, I don't know, the things would have gone haywire somehow. I'm not sure exactly how, but they would have.
Well, I mean, you don't blame the ISP. they're the one bringing it to you. Well, but I'm saying, like, there are levels, right? And so it's all about where you draw the line. And YouTube tried to straddle the line.
And if we had found no, let's say, you know, Ethereum takes off and some kind of darknet something or whatever. If it comes down to it, the ISPs would have been found, made responsible for policing this technically. You know,
don't do that with mail or phone, right? We don't hold the telephone company responsible for conversations happening over the phone.
No, we don't. You're right. But it's not the same world. I think the whole thing we're realizing now is that the web is a special case. And this is why we're asking them to police it and not saying, well, okay, you know, the courts will deal with it. That is the entire reason for it, because the courts can't. Whereas for telephones.
So it's a failure of law, if that's the case, in my opinion.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's and just so that
getting YouTube
the courts
to
hire.
The getting companies to police it is a Band-Aid and probably not a very good one.
Yeah, but then we need to hire 20,000 people to police YouTube.
No, right? Not necessarily. If we have the right laws, then the law can pressure companies to say, you have to do this. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we need to have 20,000 people to police YouTube, but maybe we come up with a principle that says, here's who's responsible for what that works.
Yeah, but then you can go and, condemn, how do you say it in English? Like, the result of a lawsuit is a
Judgment?
Judgment, yeah, and judge every video, like have a judge or a clerk look at every video and say this one.
That's already true of everything, right? You have to, but once a judge has ruled and everybody pretty much agrees, okay, that's the precedent, then you don't have to have a judge go after every case because people start to act like, okay, I know what the judge is going to say, so I'm going to avoid that. That's how law is supposed to work.
I disagree. I think this is the big issue with the internet. It's not applicable. The legal system we have is not applicable to every little tweet or comment on Facebook.
If there was a clear procedure for who was responsible for what, then it would be.
But you still need to go and have the judge, look at the case and decide on. Roger is dying here. And decide on each individual case and then do the sentencing.
No, you don't. You have a law that says here's who's responsible for what, and then if they don't act in that responsible way, then you take them to court. You don't have to have a court judge every post.
But then, so YouTube is responsible for enforcing the decision of
We need to decide that.
But that's what's happening now.
No, what's happening now is corporations are handling things by public relations rather than us deciding, well, what is the best way to handle this?
Not exactly. I think there's some of it. There's some of it, but they're not handling it by public relations. They're having people look at each instance of questionable.
No, if this was not handled by public relations, it'd have been solved right now. What it's been is like, throw this at the matter for now because that'll get people off our backs for a little while, and it keeps dragging on and it keeps not working, and you keep having algorithms breaking.
How can you oversimplify it like this? When they're trying to do it one way, they have edge cases that don't work out because the decision is never black or white. It's always complicated, and so we have all of these issues with someone saying kill all people and that is taken out of they can't. I mean, again, we could talk about this for 15 hours,
right? I want to point out that I'm trying to have this argument while publishing the show, so if I'm losing it's that I'm at a disadvantage.
That's funny.
Sorry, Sarah. Sorry, Roger. Hi.
Oh, no, I'm very entertained.
I was just waiting for a title.
End of Burgergate.
Okay.
This is one of those days where I just picked it because we were having too good of a conversation going on.
Oh, what a burger. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to vote for End of Burgergate retroactively.
Okay. What? It was up at the top. Sounded fun. Why not?
Oh, my ear.
From all the yelling. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know what? That conversation was pretty good.
Yeah, it was. Almost East meets West, like.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Just a lot of arguing.
Roger's not listening right now, is he?
You can say anything.
I didn't say anything. I didn't hear anything.
We know.
I am innocent, Your Honor. I am not involved in this court case.
All right. I'm going to log off.
But don't log off for too long.
I'm going to log off for 35 minutes.
35 of your French minutes.
Metric minutes.
Are we starting up at 2:45? Is that?
I mean, as far as people on this live stream are concerned, we're starting up on December 28th.
Right.
But yes.
Time and space is a flat circle.
Right.
But for our purposes.
We're totally not pre-recording a show that is going to go out on December 28th at 3 o'clock.
Of course, of course.
Totally.
Just, are we, but seriously.
Why don't we? We're all done here. So, Roger, why don't you end the broadcast? Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. See you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye, patrons. You guys are the best.